Let's descend the podcast into a bit of chaos.
More chaos.
More chaos.
That electric moment when a ball hits the back of the net.
Unbelievable game. Two great teams going at it.
Compared to the uterusry beside him, he just looks like the new Cafu or something.
We are making a documentary about how shit our club is.
VR is bullshit.
Who is the biggest cheater in football tonight?
Harry Kane, without a fucking doubt. Without a fucking doubt.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Football Babble. I think this is maybe episode 3 of the season starting. I think we had a preview show beforehand and we had a couple other episodes recorded secretly as well, so I'm all over the place of what episode it is, but I'll sort it out by the time I post this podcast off your Monday night, sort of Tuesday morning. It is Monday the 21st of October. The summer is almost October? Gone. August, sorry. Do you know why I said that? 21st of October, I think that's Sarah's birthday. The summer
that's Amy's
is
birthday.
Is it? Mental?
No, it isn't.
Brenton didn't know that was his sister's birthday, by the way. I have that recorded so I can tell her.
How did this go from you fucking up the intro to me not knowing Sarah's birthday?
And doxing two people.
Yes, it's the 21st of August. We've had almost completed now match day 2 of the Premier League season. It's been done now. Arsenal and Crystal Palace are duking it out at Selhurst Park. Currently 0-0 after 13 minutes, although Arsenal probably should be 1-0 up. Martinelli fluffed his lines, but here, I tried to tell Johnny that was going to happen, but he would never listen. It's just myself, Brent, and Steve on tonight. Johnny is obviously engaged with this match, which is fair enough. Patrick is on a train coming back from Dublin because he was down watching Ireland play India in the cricket this weekend, so he'll be back next week. We're going to talk a good bit about the football that happened in the Premier League this weekend. Liverpool, touch a little bit on Liverpool. We'll talk more about Chelsea and Manchester United and what we think is going wrong there and different things. And we'll obviously talk about other aspects of the Premier League season that sort of happened. But non-football, as in sport-related story that we sort of want to touch on and talk about is the Mason Greenwood story that hopefully has now come to an end of his tenure with Manchester United and English football. I think I don't think any of us are naive enough to think that'll be him done with football. I mean, I think we can all imagine him rocking up, oh, I don't know, in a Saudi Pro League in a couple of weeks, getting paid loads of money to play football. But it was broke today. Obviously, the news came out that Manchester United and Mason Greenwood decided to sever ties. Adam Crafton at The Athletic was all over this. He's been amazing. I haven't had a chance to read all of his long read this evening with bedtime and different things for Finbo, but I know the lads have had a look at it. And obviously, Steve, I don't want to chuck this at you just because you're a Manchester United fan, but I am going to do that. Yeah, the Greenwood stuff has hopefully for your sake has come to an end, but I think a lot of us who aren't Manchester United fans sort of feel solidarity with yourselves, like yourself and Rizzo and other friends that I have, that were just appalled with how the whole thing was handled, really, from start to finish.
Horrific. obviously have to be careful here because there's a legal side of things and there's a moral side of things. And the thing is, United initially acted, I think, in quite a good way. They took very quick action, yeah. Took him out of the team, had him completely away from football activities, all of that. And then it all kind of started to unravel earlier this year when, you know, the person at the centre of it asked the police not to pursue an investigation. And for Manchester United, for some reason, things got trickier then. The thing I don't understand is, regardless of Mason Greenwood not being found guilty of a crime, which is not what happened. He claimed in his own statement that he was cleared. He wasn't. There was no case brought against him. We all heard the tapes and we all saw the injuries, and he should have had nothing to do with Manchester United from that moment forward. I thought the right decision was taken today, and there's never the wrong time to do the right decision, but this took far too long to come to what was the correct conclusion. And then the statements themselves were horrific. Manchester United saying that, which is not something that has happened in a court of law, that he was innocent of all the accusations based on their evidence. And then you dive into their evidence, and Richard Arnold in his statement says that they weren't able to talk to some key people involved, who you have to imagine would be the would be Mason Greenwood's partner in this case. And you have a situation whereby they use that lack of cooperation as evidence of innocence, of innocence, which, you know, wouldn't stand up in any court of law. And then Greenwood himself, as I said, claiming he'd been cleared, which was not the case. So it all kind of, even in doing the right thing, Manchester United still managed to mess this up. And like, as a supporter of the club, I wasn't naive enough to think that they weren't going, as soon as those charges weren't continued, it was obvious what the club were going to try and do. And I think, you know, all credit to whatever employee it was that leaked what was happening to Adam Crafton in The Athletic and the work he did on not just pushing the PR line, and really getting them to, like, I see people saying that United, you know, flew a few flags last week to see what the reaction would be. I don't think they did. I think they wanted to just make this announcement and move on and weather the initial storm. And as soon as he scored his first goal, people would forget about it. I think it's the likes of Crafton and few other people and the charities around Manchester United Football Club, especially the Women's Aid charities, who repeatedly and consistently went on air and were willing to say, you know, just because a court case hasn't happened doesn't mean that Mason Greenwood is absolved of what happened. But yeah, I think you're dead right. I think he's probably finished in English football in much the same way as we saw a certain rugby player who we won't mention on this podcast, who is no longer involved in Irish rugby, but was able to find a career elsewhere. I think something similar will happen to Greenwood. And I think there's money talks. Like, the thing is, right, and none of this matters, right? But Mason Greenwood wouldn't have gotten the benefit of the doubt here if he was a bang average footballer. The reason he was extended this much leeway by Manchester United is because he had the potential to be a phenomenally good footballer. But that shouldn't that shouldn't matter. That shouldn't have any impact on this decision. It should be based on what we saw and heard. And the simple fact is, if it was you or I or some, you know, fringe squad player, they'd have been gone at the time. And I honestly don't care if he was the next Lionel Messi. Like, I didn't want him to have anything to do with Manchester United. How do you celebrate him scoring a goal? Like, how do you celebrate and win the match for you? And there were United fans who were willing to do that. Well, it wasn't for me. And, you know, I made my position clear on Ronaldo last year. This is as bad, if not worse, in terms of his behaviour. And, you know, again, I'm glad he's not going to be involved, but I hate the way they handled it.
Yeah, I think you had a great point. Like, they started it when it first came out. They handled it as well as a football club probably could handle it. They did everything right. They followed all protocol. Like, well, I don't even know if it is protocol, but what they did is what you'd want your football club to do. They removed them from all football activities, as you said, got them away, and that was it. And then all of a sudden, obviously, it didn't go to court. Charges were dropped because it was, you know, the thing was dropped, and all of a sudden then Manchester United are put in this awkward position where, like, what do we do? But really and truly, and I get people are saying that it was hard, that's an awkward position for Man United, and it's hard for them to put them into. But really and truly, they should have just went straight from there. No, sorry, we've seen what we've seen. We've heard what we've heard. We understand people make mistakes and people want all this here nonsense, blah, blah, blah. But no. And like, that would have been it then. Clear cut, done, dusted. But as you said, he has the potential to be a superstar. He was Wonder Boy, like, when he first broke through, and they thought they were banking on the fact that if he comes in, he scores a goal, a winning goal, then everyone will forget it and all. But no, society's a bit different now. Yeah. And where we're all moving on, we're all growing up. And yeah, look, they have a, I think, like, I'm not a United fan, obviously, but they have, they're going to put a serious shift in to, it seems to be, to try and get some fans back on side. And I'll include the manager in that too.
I think the manager is a lot to,
he's been weird, like,
yeah, he has. And you know, I think he should answer whether he will or not. I don't know, but I think he should answer questions about it. It's really not been a good look. And yeah, it's just textbook what not. As you said, they did the right thing at the start, but since those charges kind of went away, it's been textbook what not to do, you know, from the entire, and for a company, and I use that word very, very knowingly in this situation, with so many legal employees and so many marketing and PR employees, you'd wonder how they dropped the ball so badly. I genuinely think it's that they thought they could brazen it out. The only reason that they went about it this way is that they honestly did think that people, you know, if you'd come on Saturday and, you know, scored two against Spurs, like, would all be forgiven? And for a portion of the fan base, probably would be. You know, let's not be stupid here. Like, people follow their sports team so that they can enjoy themselves, and winning is a lot more enjoyable than losing. But there has to be, it's like the Newcastle thing, you know, you have to ask yourself bigger questions at times, you know, like what's your 90 minutes of enjoyment once or twice a week worth compared to the bigger picture?
Yeah, totally. Brenton, I know you're sort of, waiting on in the wings, or like, is your whole thoughts on it, to sum it up?
It is disgusting, really. Like, let's just get that out there to start with. The fact they were even debating over it at all, you know, shows the sort of leadership they have. I think the leadership should go, or the decision makers and in this case should take you know, a hard look at themselves, the way they're, you know, the fact that all this got out shows you that there's not strong leadership there just in the first place. Because, you know, whether they're testing the waters with some sort of leaked documents or people talking to journalists or whatever, just shows that they're not, first of all, whatever decision they're making, you know, whether they were going to reinstate him as a player or not, it shows that they weren't sure in the first place, which as an employee, as a fan, you know, as a player, manager of that club, whatever, fills you with doubt. And if, in my opinion, if you were on the right side of this issue, it fills you with even further doubt that they were even considering trying to bring Greenwood back into the fold. So, the you know, and the bits and pieces that were sort of in Adam Crafton's couple of pieces over the last week or so, you know, the fact that part of the decision making was allegedly, you know, that some people were going to be kind of more hostile than others to bringing Greenwood back, is just such a cold way to look at things. And, you know, when you consider who is the kind of alleged victim in this case as well, like, to be not even almost treating it as a human, to be kind of breaking it down to you know, stats and numbers and who's going to be on our side and who isn't, and are we going to win the public debate, blah blah blah, it's just, you know, Steve said it there, you wouldn't be happy as a fan of this club if you know that those are the people who are ultimately making the decisions about you know, the team and the club that you care about. So, I mean, with the help of a lot of sort of kickback from the public and just the leaks and the shocking coverage they've had as a club, they have got there in the end, but to the right decision, in my opinion. But I mean, by no means should they be getting a pat on the back for it.
No, no one really on that side should be getting any pat on any back. Like, just they count themselves lucky the story is over now, really, to be honest, because some people have gotten away with being, as you said, used a good word, disgusting, really. But that story's maybe done with. Greenwood will move on. As we said, he'll probably end up in the Saudi Pro League or somewhere, and he'll score a bucket full of goals and whatever. And we'll probably have to see him all over Twitter and social media scoring goals. But it is what it is. Unfortunately, football is broken in a lot of places still. And the way it sort of, even I think sports are, in the way we, like, we would, me and Steve would follow a lot of obviously NFL and American sports, baseball and NBA, and there's countless occasions where young men have acted horrendously and still treated as gods, weirdly.
I was gonna say, this is like the second time in like a year a sports team that I've been involved with has seen a young player with the potential to be a superstar throw their career away. And that's not the focus, though, right? It doesn't matter that Henry Ruggs could have been a phenomenal wide receiver. It doesn't matter that Mason Greenwood could have been, you know, like a world-class striker. What matters is hopefully that, you know, in Henry Rowe's case, that his victim's family gets some peace. And in Mason Greenwood's, that his partner just has the life I hope she deserves. And it's better than the one she's lived so far. Because it's only sport. Like, it's supposed to be fun, and we shouldn't. It's such a shit buzz to be, like, constantly having to make excuses for enjoying our pastime, you know? And I saw so many people at the weekend talking about, well, of course United are going to, you know, welcome Greenwood back. They welcomed Ronaldo in. And that's true as a club, and to be honest, in the Ronaldo case, and as a majority of the fan base, but, you know, at the risk of doing it, not all men, it's not all of us though either. And I know why people would think so, because United have now proven themselves in two cases to have had significantly poor judgment. And you, as Brendan said, like, you can't really trust this leadership now to make the right call. And like, how must the United women's team feel? How must any woman who supports Manchester United feel? And men, like, I mean, we get it, but we're not the victims of this kind of sexual violence for the most part. And like, to dismiss their concerns, you know, for United in this like memo that they had to portray women's aid charities as people who would be antagonistic towards them, people who are doing some of the toughest work, charity work out there, and United are viewing them as the enemy, like, that's some bullshit. Like,
you know, you're on the wrong side when you're doing that.
Big time.
And also, I'll just say as well about Greenwood, like, he's, you know, I'm assuming, I'm hoping he'll never play for England. And we know, you know, how close they have been to winning major tournaments recently, and to throw that all away, you know, just shows that he has a problem, and that's kind of where the whole thing started, and where the issue, you know, needs to be tackled among people who are maybe going down that road. But it's probably something for people with brighter minds than myself anyway to discuss. Yes.
Yeah. Not going to segue across because you can't really, but we're going to move on to the actual football and what's been happening within football as an actual sport in the Premier League this weekend. As Sterling mentioned at the top of the show, and I know Steve actually said you want your teams to win, not lose. Well, unfortunately, both your teams lost this weekend, lad. So, and I did get the feeling of seeing my team win, which is nice. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Manchester United and Chelsea sort of at together at the minute. Like, two sort of separate issues, I think, both clubs tactically. At the minute, I don't think Chelsea are stuck for midfielders. Mm-hmm. Manchester United are stuck with one, having to do everything on his own at the minute. I will caveat this. Bruno Fernandes' offense going forward was very good and unlucky on Saturday night that no one could score for him. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he missed from 6 yards.
And he missed himself, yeah. But back the way his Casemiro looks like he's followed my diet, no harm to him for the summer. Only he has 5 European Cups behind him, and he looks way off the pace. I think just before we came on tonight, actually, Carragher highlighted it there. And this isn't just a Casemiro issue at all, by the way, and I will speak about that in a minute. He highlighted how Casemiro got sort of outrun and easily passed by James Maddison, who was unbelievable on Saturday night. I was lucky enough to sit back and watch parts of it last night again, highlights packages. Pardon me, while I was waiting on Real Betis and Atletico Madrid starting, and he was unreal. And what Carragher was highlighting too, sorry, in Casemiro tonight, was just how he was diving in and he was so easily passed, but he's getting no help. And Carragher alluded to, like, he's been dribbled past the most as a defensive midfielder. Now, Gallagher and McAllister are in these stats. They've had 3 and they've had 2. They're not really 2 sixes. Casemiro is. He's been dribbled past 6 times so far already in the 2 games now they've played. Now, there was a couple of highlights of, I think Bruno's been dribbled past 7 times, but you don't really expect Bruno Fernandes has been making many tackles. And Mason Greenwood, I think, has been 4. So that's United's midfield. That's what, 6 and 7, 13 and 4, what is that, 17 times or something like that there, passed so many times in the first 2 games, which is not ideal at all. There's a lot of talk, obviously, my club needs to go and get maybe another defensive midfielder. I don't think they do personally, I'll mention that in a minute, but Manchester United definitely need to get someone in there. And I don't think it needs to be another number 6, but they need someone in there physical. I know they let Fred go, and Steve's probably going to roll his eyes at me, but they need someone in there. Peak Fred before he arrived, maybe when he was playing very well at Shakhtar Donetsk. Someone to come in the midfield alongside Casemiro to do a good bit of his running for him.
Yeah.
Because Casemiro's legs have gone and his dust is just... That's really ignorant. And even I wouldn't say that. Casemiro was absolutely outstanding. A world-class midfielder. You need to get someone in beside him. That's going to help, because that issue, United, when Højlund gets up and going, which obviously Steve hopes is going to happen, they're going to have a goal-scoring threat. Garnacho, again, looked quite good in small touches and different things in the game. Looks very clever. He's still very young.
Yeah.
Anthony is your Nunes, but whatever.
No, and then you've Nunes Rashford. Scores at least.
Well, you've Rashford, you know, too. So that's all right. Yes, there's a little issue at defence. We'll talk about Lissandro Martinez in a minute. But that midfield's Man United's glaring option, Steve. What are they going to do? Because Bissouma and Pep Sarr and James Maddison had an absolute field day on Saturday night in the second half.
Yeah. I was chatting to a Spurs supporter today who I work with, and he was saying that on Saturday before the game, he decided to... I'm not sure when their next home game is, but he decided he was going to go over to London for it. Because there was loads of tickets still available. There was like 45% availability. This is where Spurs fans' heads were. And today he logged on to buy tickets, and there was a 17-minute wait time in the queue to buy tickets. Right? So Spurs are back if you're following the Spurs tracker. I think the solve is I think it's not... I don't know if there's the quality of defensive midfielder left out there at this stage without them having to go and do something stupid money-wise. I think it's what we kind of chatted about last week. I think if they could get another center half and free Martinez up to move into the middle to help to help out with the defensive duties there, I think that's the solve, to be absolutely honest with you, because the like, whatever about if you're beating down the wings by pace and stuff like that, but just to watch the players just stroll through the middle of the park on Saturday evening was just incredible, like, and disheartening. And if your system is so easily kind of countered by something like that, it's probably time to change things up. The thing that fascinated me the most was just how much time Mason Mount spent within 5 meters of Fernandez. Like, that's not what he was brought in for, but it's what he was always going to do. Like, it's just really, really emphasizing what a poor signing that was. When they needed someone who could do Fred's role, but do it competently. And Mount is not that person. I made a joke on Twitter about, like, you know, United might come good when he finally makes his debut, because he really has been invisible.
I saw that in Saturday.
For two games. Like, he genuinely has.
He's not really the right fit, as you said.
He's not the right fit. Yeah. And he's not, like, especially, like, I thought Bruno was harshly treated on Saturday with the yellow card he got for asking, you know, about questioning the referee about a yellow card he'd given out beforehand. It's like, that's your job as captain. You have to be allowed to talk to the referee. And he was kind of playing a little bit on tilt after that. There was a couple of times he stuck out the leg that, you know, if a Spurs player had really wanted to, probably could have got him a very cheap second yellow card. And so I didn't like that. But I thought, like, the thing was, like, they convert either of the two sitters that they kind of created in the first half before Spurs scored. I think they go on and win that game very comfortably. They feel to me like a team that are going to be much more comfortable leading games than they are chasing them. But I think you're right. It all comes down to getting help in that defensive midfield area, because it's open season at the moment. And I thought we're actually quite lucky that Spurs tend to play in a way that kind of narrows the field a lot. So it gave United an excuse to be even though they were dribbled past quite a lot, it gave them an excuse to be a little bit more compact than they would normally be. So if Spurs had kind of seen sense in that game, they might have been able to run up a score, to be absolutely honest with you. But that all said, like, I didn't see Anton on Saturday that I didn't see in the first game either, you know? And it's why I kind of said, and Rizzo was giving out to me, and a couple of other people were giving out to me for you know, taking United's title chances and top four chances off the play after 90 minutes of football. But, like, I kind of felt like Saturday, I don't think it's that this is going to be a problem over the course of the season. I think whatever Ten Hag is doing with them in pre-season, like, they've just started so leggy. They really have. They all look off the pace. And that's an issue when you're playing catch-up. We should look at City. Like, City looked like they could cruise to 3 points a game, like, without putting too much effort in. So there's no way you can give them a head start like this.
I think United should have went for Mohamed Kudus, to be honest, rather than Mason Mount. I want Liverpool to sign Mohamed Kudus, so I don't want this to happen, but I do think United...
You've just put out there, Chelsea look at sign him now.
Probably, but I think United should look at him. He's not going to play like a six beside Casemiro, but...
I don't think they need a six, though. I don't think they need... He just needs a bit of help, that's it, yeah.
You need a Gini Wijnaldum. You need someone to come in... Like, Liverpool, I'm going to talk about him, I'm going to talk about Liverpool. Liverpool have Dominic Szoboszlai now, who is just, like, the upgrade on Jordan Henderson in two games is absolutely wild. And that's, United need someone like that. Someone like Kudus would have been picked the ball up the way Mason Mount had have got it. In front of, I think it was Pep Sarr. And what Kudus does is skips away and he's gone. Bang. And the counter-attack straight on. United don't have that yet. It's still slow and thing, and they're really relying on Bruno Fernandes to just try and do something to get someone involved, pull them out of a hole, and that's not going to get you where United need to be going this year, because you have to remember, you're in the Champions League again.
You know, yeah.
The Champions League draw is coming up. You're going to be in the Champions League again. You're Manchester United. You're going to be expected to get through the knockout stage of the Champions League. And at the minute, you look at that going, if they get the wrong draw, you end up in a group of death, because there's always one.
It could go very badly very quickly. The one positive I will say is that I think the difference in distribution from the back from Onana compared to De Gea, it's like,
this is what
football in 2023 is supposed to look like. He had a couple off both feet that were like any midfielder would have been delighted with quality in the past. Yeah. Like, you know,
they were good.
Yeah, but issues with prop decision making again.
The own goal, I saw it again tonight. He just sort of falls down and flaps at it. Like, listen, Martinez had a stinker.
Yeah, he did.
Half. Onana could not have got to that, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's harsh.
It was. I'm not completely criticizing him, but it was going at 2 miles an hour, Brenton. You know what I mean? It's 2 miles an hour, like, and he's wrong. Somehow he's wrong footed. I'm not blaming him. It was Martinez. I don't know what he was doing. Yeah. But I think he might have a bit of a Martinez problem, if I'm honest. I think he's like half a Dejan Lovren, and he's just scatty as fuck. Like, you know what I mean? It's when he, and you can really tell, you can tell when Martinez is on it, and you can tell United are going to be all right here in certain parts of this game, because you can tell when he's at it. You can also massively tell when his head's gone.
Yeah.
Like, even if you notice when he shoulder barged into Romero, and Romero fell down, he tried to boot the ball at him. And he missed it, like, and you're like, what are you at, you maniac? Like, do you know what I mean? I really like him, and I get why United fans like him.
Yeah, I'll give him more leeway because I like him. I'll give him more leeway. You're not wrong in any of that analysis.
look, I give Darwin Nunez more leeway than anyone would care to give him, because, He's already a cult here. He's been there one season, but he tries all. He just gives everything all the time. But he is complete scatty, and you get that feeling off Martinez too. But still, 2 weeks to go in the transfer window. It's Manchester United. Like, they'll attract attention, and they'll try and get someone. There's been links with Gravenberch today between Manchester United and Liverpool. A lot of Liverpool fans don't seem that sold on him. I don't know what United fans think, but I mean, he'd be another good addition. He can play the 8. He can drop into the 6. Get him in, get him fit, get him play. He played very well when he was at Ajax. There's a reason why Bayern Munich went for him. It'd be another great addition. But there, that made, as Carragher highlighted in a piece he did in a newspaper, I think it was, you mentioned with Damian Lillaby, and a bit he did on Monday Night Football tonight. The glaring issue for Manchester United is that midfield and trying to get help for Casemiro. Now, he was pinning all on Casemiro. I don't think it is. They need to get someone in and help him because he looks like he's just running around in circles, and he's getting skint left, right, and center, and so many glaring holes. Move on to Chelsea, Brenton.
That's not
brilliant week. We have to. We had a great week. a great week for signings. Obviously, he signed Lavia and Caicedo. Started the game yesterday. Obviously went behind, but played really, really well the first half against West Ham. Really well, like some brilliant football. I thought Raheem Sterling was class again. Excellent. In the first half. I thought he was really, really good. Looks like under Potts that he's found a bit more of himself, and he looks a bit more reborn. But just couldn't really stick away chances. Penalty missed, and it looked like it threw Enzo's head. It looked like Enzo, like from last week, he was so composed at times, especially in the second half against Liverpool, took control of that game. Liverpool couldn't get near him. Whereas yesterday in the second half, he didn't really get into it at all. And he looked like he was struggling a bit. What are your thoughts on yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's United and Chelsea, although they're positionally, maybe their issues aren't the same. I feel like they generally have the same problem. Like, they need to be almost 2 or maybe 3 goals up before you feel confident in them winning the game, because, like, you're not really sure. And I know this is a new enough look Chelsea side, but you're not really sure exactly where the goals are coming from. You know, hopefully Nico Jackson will eventually get there. And I know Nkuku had an unfortunate injury. And we've kind of been talking about that offer. I don't know who Chelsea are going to go after, but you need, you know, it's such a shame for Kearney Chukwuemeka as well. Like he had a really good half. He took his goal brilliantly. It's these types of players that need to be chipping in with goals and assists. You know, what we kind of thought Mudrick was going to be, who just had another stinker when he came off the bench. He's so low on confidence, you can tell. It's unbelievable. But yeah, the Premier League's hard. You know, West Ham know how to play against a team like Chelsea. And I think that one of the main reasons Enzo wasn't as influential as he was is because he didn't have the space he had against Liverpool. The space he had against Liverpool was wild, really. That's why it was such a good game. It was end to end because he was getting the ball. Yes, he was maybe, you know, beating one player, but then, you know, he'd time to pick out a pass or he pushed on 5-10 yards. The play was all kind of in front of West Ham. They sat in two banks. They were hard to break down. That's why someone like Sterling was good, because he was going beyond his defender and he was breaking into the box. And again, similar to the United issue, I think if they score that penalty right before halftime, it changes the game completely. You know, Chelsea may go on to win that game, but that's what I was talking about generally, like United, you can't rely on anyone yet. I'd say across both of the squads, you pretty much know you can rely on Thiago Silva 99% of the time. And United, you can sort of hang your hat on Bruno Fernandes that, you know, he's probably going to be their best player in a sort of any given 90 minutes. Apart from that, Chelsea were learning who's going to do it.
What names of teammates?
Yeah. And that's a good point, because I think that's evident as well, especially when, Chukwuemeka gets injured before halftime. Poch kind of changes the system. Mudrick comes on. You can tell he's not as comfortable in the system. Then, we may as well talk about Caicedo, get it over with. But he comes on, doesn't know. I said it before the game. Like I was happy Lavia wasn't even in the squad, because like, he's been there for about 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know where he should be. In the different phases of play. Excuse me. And I did say at the time, it's not a game for Caicedo to really come on when you're getting beat. You know, you need somebody in the final third who, like Sterling, had maybe run out of steam a little bit. Somebody who's going to push beyond defenders and cut balls back or whatever.
Everyone's should be looking at Mohamed Kudus. I'm telling you, everyone should be looking at Mohamed Kudus.
But yeah, like that, you know, I felt sorry for him because, yeah, it was definitely a penalty, like, and not an ideal debut. He kind of got into a macho-y-macho with Lucas Paqueta as well, which, you know, didn't work out for him. But West Ham did what West Ham do and have been doing to Chelsea the last couple of seasons. Antonio was not in the game at all in the first half, and after he scored his goal, his confidence went up, and he was bossing it. He was holding the ball up. He was winning free kicks. He was doing exactly what you'd want your number 9 to do in that situation. I'm not anywhere near turning my back on Pochettino, and think it is a work in progress. But you know, like Martin O'Neill, I think it was said today, you know, you can't be a work in progress at Chelsea. You have to get results now. And Pochettino did say that at the start of the season, to be fair. But you know, let's hope it starts with Luton on Friday night, and they can kind of build from there.
I think you're bang on. Like, the thing with Chelsea is the Caicedo stuff, to get it over and done with first. Like, a lot of people now, Liverpool fans were enjoying it. I did enjoy it. I'm going to not gonna lie. I did enjoy that he gave away a penalty. It's like, ha. But I know down the line, you know, it's going to be like, for fuck's sake, they've got Caicedo, look how good he is. A lot of people, and I heard a podcast today, I'll not mention it, The Athletic, talking about one of the West Ham writers was on it, and he was talking about I can't believe the money they paid for them. It is a lot of money, don't get me wrong, and a bang average. And you're just thinking, where everybody gets hyper when we beat, win a football match.
Mm.
But let's all think, you know, the thing with Chelsea, and it was so evident on Sunday at times, that when the chips were obviously thrown down at them because West Ham took the lead, the players aren't sure who they can rely on just yet.
Yeah,
and that'll come over time. Like, and you as you said, the one you can rely on is Thiago Silva. Now, what also as well is a wee bit weird is, I find Pochettino is almost now, like the likes of Colwell, he's trying to force him, find a place for him, make sure he's definitely in the team because of they've got him from Brighton, and he's probably, look, all talks were that he was maybe going to leave Chelsea, but Pochettino had a good chat with him and managed to convince him. Just start him beside Thiago Silva. Start him in at centre-half. Do you know what I mean? I pushed him out to left-back and different things. And he wasn't a blatant fault for any of the goals, but I think he's wasted out there, to be honest. And you saw at times last Sunday where if he gets isolated, that's Mo Salah, he got in a bit of bother. Do you know what I mean? I would have had him in. And just like the subs, you were right as well. Like Mudrik coming on, different things. It just didn't seem to work. But that's Pochettino's second game in. He's still trying to figure out who he can rely on, and who he sort of can't. I think you're beat 3-1. I genuinely think it'll stand Chelsea and Pochettino good in the long stead, because Pochettino sort of looks at that now, small sample size, and goes, "Well, I sort of know who I can definitely rely on. What sort of is working out." He's been unlucky with a lot of injuries, like knee injuries, hamstrings to Reece James. Trevor Shalaba hurt himself in training as well. You know, if he was in the squad, he's maybe not the best defender you have, but he's been there for a while. He knows Thiago Silva beside him. He knows that you have a new goalkeeper in too.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the place. And West Ham, I actually hate when Liverpool go to London Stadium, because see if Antonio gets a sniff. Yeah. He's a brute. He's an absolute monster trying to play against. When he just gets, and that stadium is class. Now they have it pumping. Jared Bowen as well, such a handful. If he'd scored that goal from Fornals pass, Holy Ghost, thought he was going to roast Chelsea. But I think in the long run, you see Chelsea are going to be fine. I do think though, they're going to have to go through a transfer window where they don't buy 10 players, because this is going to be the case. I want to ask you, Brenton. I know it's impossible, Todd Boehly. Somebody needs to bring Todd Boehly and say, "Listen, Todd, calmer. I don't want to ask you this, Brenton. Like, is it hard for you to like warm to this squad yet? Apart from obviously Thiago Silva. I mean, it's not hard to warm to him. I think everybody loves Thiago Silva. But is there aspects of this squad where you're like,
pfft. Steve shaking his head for some reason?
I don't like Thiago Silva at all.
Get what? Park that. We'll come back to that. Is it hard for you though? Like, because you know, there's so many players have come in. Like, you're like all over the place as well. Like, cause it does feel really scary at Chelsea.
You do like a bit of consistency, obviously, and players you sort of know have been there and care about the club, etc., etc. But we still have that. In Thiago Silva and Ben Chilwell and Reece James, you have that in your team. But, you know, there's certain players, I think that's always the case, that you warm to, certain ones you don't. Nico Jackson, I've warmed to immediately. Like, you can tell that he cares, you know, not just if the team wins or not, but if he's putting in the effort that he deems worthy of, you know, being a starting number 9 for Chelsea, for example. He works his bollocks off, and you know, you would hope that he eventually is going to get there with the goals as well. I think I've seen enough from him to kind of know that. But yeah, I mean, you want to see these players, I think, perform in big games and give big performances for your club. And Chelsea aren't, you know yourself, big necks in the Champions League, and somebody steps up and does something and, you know, celebrates in front of the shed end, whatever it is, you know, it doesn't take long to share that sort of passion with some of these players. But they're not going to have any European football this season, so they're going to have to do something else to win over the fans. Thiago Silva.
Yes, Steve, why do you not like Thiago Silva?
He's a phenomenal footballer. I just don't like his face.
Oh.
Just him as a person. Okay. It's just my general hatred against any Brazilian footballers, I think.
Any Brazilian footballers?
Yeah. Any at all.
Fuck's sake, he's called war in Brazil now.
I saw a great... I won't go into it. There was a great joke about Anthony Dindarens on Twitter at the weekend and a former president of Brazil. I don't know if you saw it.
No,
Bolsonaro.
Basically that Anthony is the worst Brazilian right winger since Bolsonaro.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, speaking of, what about Neymar getting a Boeing 747 on his own from Paris to Saudi Arabia?
I have to fucking endure a milkshake with a paper fucking straw that doesn't last one third of the milkshake, and that fucker is on a private 747. Nah.
I know.
Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful.
I just hate everything to do with Saudi Pro League. It's really pissing me off. You know, it's really like...
And Neymar, to be fair. Well, no, put those two things together, it's like the fucking nuclear war.
I can think of a couple of Brazilian footballers that I would literally give a testicle to. One of them is currently playing Nets for Liverpool at the minute. And the other one, well, he's actually gone to Saudi. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Actually, we're going to get on to Liverpool now. That's a nice segue into Liverpool. For the first half an hour on Saturday... Yep.
Don't get me wrong.
I thought Alisson had found out God wasn't real or something. He was completely off the mark.
Like. So, let's talk about Liverpool and Bournemouth. Seems to be a pattern for Liverpool. It was a pattern in the game, sorry. But Liverpool have started against Chelsea very well. So you thought, oh, cool. This is back. Liverpool starting games very well. Cool, cool, cool. But against Bournemouth, it was complete opposite. So there's a couple of things. I don't know if you saw the full highlights, Brent, but there was Alisson coming out, and then his foot like just stopped as he's running out, and he ended up cleaning out the Bournemouth attacker, and only got saved from getting sent off because Konate was literally, I think actually Konate moves because he's anticipating this, he's going to make a balls here, and he moves inside just to anticipate that there could be a mistake, and then he's the last man, and that saves him. Then there's not just Alisson. There's last week, I don't know if you remember, we talked about Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I say when he moves in the midfield, he doesn't scan enough yet, right? And again, I love Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think I've said it enough times, I think he's one of Liverpool's, if not best player, maybe top two or three, definitely he's outstanding. But it was so evident. This is the first goal, if you look back on it, Van Dijk plays the ball into him. He doesn't look at what he's at. He doesn't see any pressure around him. The ball gets nipped off him. Roberts makes a decent tackle to block it. It falls to Semenyo and he smashes it into the corner. It's actually a great goal, an unbelievable celebration too. But this gets lost when you don't win a game, it gets lost then. And that all comes from there. And on Monday Night Football, Karen Carney and Gary Neville did a brilliant piece on it, if you get to check it out, where they show it. And Gary Neville's talking about right backs, and right backs in the midfield doesn't really work. All Trent has to do, and it sounds very simple, is just look over his left and his right shoulder, and he'll know then that the ball's coming. So when the ball comes in, then he goes to take a touch. He just has to flick it around the corner. And even if he flicks it in that scenario for me, and it goes out, it goes 40 yards, but it goes out, Liverpool move up the pitch. Now, Karen Carney's point as well, should Van Dijk give the ball into him in that space? Well, yes, that's where your six is going to be. That goes into Thiago, then... You know, Thiago is a bit different. It goes into Thiago, he keeps the ball. Goes into Enzo Fernandez, he turns, keeps the ball. What was evident, and we'll go back in a bit, Liverpool, and when Endo came on, the same pass went into Endo, but he's able to turn his body out and away he goes because he knows the role. He's played the role, and he's 39. He's played the role for so many years. He knows it. Liverpool looked shaky, and then they got a grip
on that goal, because I fully blamed Robertson for it, because I don't think he tracks Semenyo's run at all, and then he, I don't know what he's trying to do with the clearance, but he just runs into Big Virgil.
Yeah, and he's trying to like not foul, but also not take out Virgil. He's stuck in no man's land, yeah. And then he just like blocks it. But
I will say that's part of my narrative, that Robertson is the problem for Liverpool and not Alvin Reynolds.
Yeah, so no, there seems to be a lot of this, and I get it too, that it is his issue. It is all Robertson, but the goal, in my opinion, is solely Trent's fault. It comes from Trent making a mistake. Now, he ends up playing so many decent passes and playing quite well after that, but that, if you look back on that goal, pardon me, you'll see it all comes from him. Now what happens then is obviously Liverpool go 1-0 behind, they should be 2-0 behind, they almost give away a penalty, and then something snaps when they click into gear, and Szoboszlai and McAllister and Gakpo start to do things in midfield. Luis Diaz produces a brilliant goal, and then we get a penalty, a soft penalty. Szoboszlai wins, Mo Salah misses, but then he converts it. And then what happens then after that is obviously when the McAllister gets sent off, a bit like Sunday for Chelsea, Liverpool's new midfielder has to get thrown in, and this is Endo. But what I wanted to touch on, the difference was that yes, Szoboszlai is only new, Gakpo's been there a while, the whole back four, back five's been there for years, Salah and Diaz and Jota have been there for years, so it's really easy for Endo to slot into there, because he's just told, just go in, as Klopp said to him afterwards, I don't know if you saw this, just go in and sit at six. Just go in and sit at six and play like you're playing the Bundesliga. And it was so easy then for him to sort of infiltrate into the game. And it's really weird, like, McAllister was having a great game, gets sent off, hopefully it'll be rescinded. I don't think it will be, because we're supposed to be giving referees respect, and we should be giving, well, referees respect, definitely 100%, but there's what's happened now is, because we've all gotten on at them, they're all just going to protect each other. So I don't think that's going to get rescinded. It should be. It was not a red card. It's a yellow card. We saw it happen again in the City game later that night, and it was a yellow card from Anthony Gordon. But look, I hope it's rescinded, but it's not going to be. Anyway, Liverpool seem to get a control of the game when they have 10 men. And they're look much better. Endo sits in midfield beside Szoboszlai. Jota really comes into it. Gakpo comes into it. Salah does bits. And I actually think, if you look back at last season, any time we faced adversity, we folded. Liverpool just buckled, and away they went, and they couldn't get back into it. I think that result on Saturday could be one of the most important results for Liverpool this season, because it showed, hang on, we went behind with 10 men, and we should have got someone sent off, or we were behind and went down to 10 men. We kicked on in this game. The Bournemouth aren't world beaters, but they're not slouches either. You can already see they're quite well coached, and they came back into it. I think it's a really, really important result for Liverpool. Another thing as well, as a Liverpool fan, and as if you're watching the match, Dominic Szoboszlai, holy Moses, just decided
he had himself.
The soft penalty. It was, you know, he put his hands out like Steven Gerrard. It was pure Steven Gerrard starfish. So he's wearing a number 8. He's doing the starfish dive. He's winning the fans over left, right, and centre. That's not a penalty. As Alan Shearer said, you can see why it's given, because there is contact. He wins the penalty, obviously, and delighted to have won a penalty, but if that happens against us, you want to kick the TV in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there needs to be. But anyway, but he was so good. He grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. His direct runs from midfield, getting out of possession. He skipped past two Bournemouth players to set up Jota at one point as well, which is amazing in the second half. He was absolutely superb. He had Anfield buzzing. Really looking forward to it, how he goes this season. What I wanted to bring your two clubs back into as well. So there's an international break in two games. Okay, no, not to compare. There's an international break in two games. And then there's another break, block of four games, and there's another international break. Right? So Liverpool have Aston Villa and Newcastle. So they have Newcastle on Sunday, and then they have Aston Villa. Ideally, I think for Liverpool, 8 points over the first four games, you take that.
Yeah.
If one's a draw at Newcastle, you beat Aston Villa at home. Now, 10 points and you're motoring. All right. Again, not for the title, because I think that's Man City's, but you're motoring for second. I think that's where Liverpool are looking at this year. They'll not admit it. Like, they'll say, oh, we're going to try win the title. Cannot see it. They have a good enough front line, but you just look at Man City and you go, bollocks. So 8 points, possibly 10 for Liverpool. 10's unbelievable and it's the maximum they can get. 8 is, I think, I'd be very happy with that. Chelsea play Luton and Forest. 7 points minimum, Brenton. Would you agree?
After Luton and Forest? Four games. 6? Oh, right, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you'd be finishing on. I knew I didn't cover myself in glory there. You look at that going, this fucking dumbass. Stephen. United, where I had
Forest and Arsenal.
Forest and Arsenal.
Yeah, two easy games.
United are in a three on 3 points. Are you saying 9 points? Are you saying 7?
9.
you fell into my trap.
Yes. At all. Look, I told you what I thought about Arsenal last week. I didn't think they were great last week. I don't think they're playing very well tonight. I mean, there's not a huge gap between United and Arsenal at the moment. This is not the Arsenal we watched last season, bottle of the league. Like, this is a very different prospect, you know? So,
oh, I can already hear Mold screaming. You think United will finish in the first 4 blocks? They're going to come out of this in the international break in 7 points. Arsenal play yourselves, obviously play the Palace tonight. Then they play Fulham. Then they play United. So I'd say Mud would be thinking around about 10 points. I don't think they'll get the 12 because I don't know if they're going to win. I think there'll be a draw tonight. But you can see where I'm going with this. There's a block. So you're sort of looking at, like, then you have another block to kick on again. So that's why, like, a lot of people are mentioning that this is sort of like a pre-season. And Cop has mentioned that before. And I just wonder what you thought of that. Like, so are these sort of games, like, just get through these first 4 games, especially for Chelsea, Brenton, trying to meet everyone and know everyone. Just get through these first 4 games. I mean, if Chelsea come out of this, they win their next 2 games. I know it looks, there's a penalty for Arsenal, I think. I know it looks pretty horrendous at the minute because of what's happened, but if you come out of this with 7 points from your first 4, you're sort of looking and going, you know what, all the new players in, we're still in the money, no one will really be cantering away in the top 4 race yet, and either happy enough.
Yeah, the thing is, though, they had a good actual pre-season. So then, but the whole thing...
That's never been. Sorry, huh? I thought I went on mute there. It's never been.
Oh, that angle it is. Sorry, Brenton, go on.
Is it a VAR job?
He's giving it, but like...
Oh, it's yellow.
Yeah, if you look back at it, Brenton, he is clumsy. Sam Johnson is clumsy. Like.
Yeah, but there's no way he's winning the ball back there. He kicks it towards the corner flag. Like he's not getting another touch.
Oh, I think there's a foul. There's a foul. Party fouls, I think.
I'm sure the people who are listening to this on Thursday are really
yes, sorry. Brenton, go on ahead and pitch out.
Sorry, it's my bad.
Yes. Yeah, they had a really good preseason. Everything's kind of fallen down since Nkunku got injured, and sort of dominoes have started to fall since that. But yeah, I think like we've seen enough kind of positives. Like Jackson against Liverpool was really, really good. Obviously Sterling in the game at the weekend showed signs of life, definitely, if he can sort of step up as a senior player and continue that. You know, hopefully on paper now they do have 2 of the easier games, and I say that very nervously, to build up a few points. They've a League Cup game in between against Wimbledon as well at Stamford Bridge. So, you know, if you're talking about 3 games at home, you would hope 3 wins. You know, we know football and how sort of quickly it can change. And, you know, the atmosphere might be very different. That I see that actually has been given as a penalty.
Oh, it's been scored now.
All right.
Odegaard scored it. Stephen, then United's next possible, what do you think after the block? Do you think they're going to be on 9 points because you're an absolute madman? But I mean, if you're on 9 points, because you'd imagine City would be on 12, you'd be title challenger, sir?
Absolutely not. What do you think I am? Do you think this is my first rodeo? No. Manchester City are going to win every game on their way to like a record point in the title. So like, there's no chance for anyone else. No, but like, look, like, genuine. What's 38 multiplied by 3?
Yeah. That's 114. One less than all the charges they're facing.
Hey. You just have to look at the way they absolutely just dispatched of Newcastle at the weekend to look at the gap between
them. It was a 1-0 hammering.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, genuinely was. And Haaland was poor. Very, very poor. And they still won. So I just think that there's such a gulf. There's just such a gulf between them and everybody else that it really is like it's 4-3 or 5-3, and that just doesn't go. I think United are going to struggle to make Champions League football this year. So I think United should be looking at taking 7 to 9 points from every block of 4. And that realistically probably won't be enough for Champions League football. You need to be looking at 9 or 12 from a few of those. And I just don't see United putting together 4 wins in a row. Which is right now, I just don't see it.
Interesting. Bit doom and gloom for there for the podcast. I think Liverpool.
This is where we're at.
Yeah, it's okay.
England lost the World Cup final on Sunday. Lots of good in the world.
That was excellent, actually. Yeah. Everton are going to get relegated after the next block of 4 games, which is excellent too. That is some going. Whatever they're at here right now, that is some effort that they're. And you know what they need? They need Che Adams. That's exactly what they need. They need a Che Adams for that relegation fight because he knows what they're at. I feel sorry for Sean Dyche because his hands are completely tied. They've no money.
No money.
They've backed it all on all our transfers and over the years and different things. They're trying to build a new stadium. And it's just, they're in a hole here. And I don't know if they're going to. I think this is the year it finally succumbs for them.
Look, if you circle the drain for as long as they've been circling the drain, gravity eventually takes over. You can't be playing the fire at the bottom of the league like that for as long as they have.
No.
And expect to constantly stay up.
No.
I think my Brighton Champions League football prediction from last week, staying quite nicely, absolutely hammered.
Well, I think they'd win it if they were in it this year. I think my Thomas about to win the Ballon d'Or the way he's getting on.
Yeah.
I saw someone mention such a great deal that they're able to get Mitoma from 2.7 million. It's a little bit different though, is it not? If they not own the club he's coming from,
yeah, exactly. It's very easy,
The Brighton project's class, but it's murky too. To move on from the football, me and Brighton obviously were on holidays this weekend together with the family, all of us down, 14 of us, in Monaghan, just outside Castle Blaney. Only one couple of the family were not able to go there because there's a recent new arrival, another niece into the family for me and Brenton. But we were all down, had a great time, and then I have this game. My dad was given, my mum bought my dad carpet bowls for Christmas 1 year, so it's actually like proper lawn bowls, but they're wee tiny mini ones. And she gave it to me then, obviously, because he doesn't play them anymore, he did. But so I had them on holidays there, and obviously was playing. And it took you ages to click on that one, Steve. That was one of my best ones yet.
That long to process. Did he actually say that?
Yeah. And so we had them on holidays anyway, and we took them out on Sunday morning to play them. And Brenton, tell them who won between me and you.
Well, do you mean who won, overall?
Well, my son, tournament? Who's 3, won overall. He was undefeated.
Beating
uncles, aunties, and grannies left, right, and center. I beat him, but obviously was too afraid to sort of start the emotions of things. So we agreed, he agreed that he won or we drew. So we called it a draw, even though my bowl was clearly closer. It was a great time, great crack. As I said, I beat Brenton quite comfortably in bowls. Obviously, he'll
pre-season bowls.
We're going to do it for the Babel.
We're going to do a Babel tournament.
Big time. One thing also as well, non-holiday related, I think I mentioned it last week, or mentioned one of these podcasts, I've got back into watching lots of Seinfeld, especially when I'm editing the podcast. So tonight I'll stick on after the Arsenal-Chelsea match, and when I'm waiting on this downloading, I'll stick on a couple of episodes of Seinfeld, because it really chills me out, it's good crack. And then I noticed I was dressed exactly like George Costanza on holidays. had Nike Cortez on, I had navy jeans, and I had a grey sweatshirt on. I was wearing glasses. I was like, oh, bollocks, what is happening here? And I don't know what, how that has happened, but that has happened. Yeah, so a bit of a quirkiness turning the George Costanza on the holidays. Stephen.
Yes.
Just to finish off the podcast, you went to wrestling at the weekend. Yeah. Discuss.
I brought my my 10-year-old to his first ever wrestling show. My first ever wrestling show as an adult. That was class. Yeah, we went to Over the Top wrestling, and there was a four-way ladder Money in the Bank match. There was loads of tag team stuff. It was good. It was enjoyable. Like, you know, you kind of have to, when you've got a kid and you know what's happening, you kind of have to act as if you're shocked that the manager has got involved, and you know, to get him. But by the end, like, I thought one stage he was going to get sick laughing, because at the very first fight there was toilet roll underneath everyone's seat, and when the bad guys entered the ring, we were all to fuck toilet roll into the ring, and he thought this was the funniest thing he'd ever seen in his life. I genuinely thought I was going to have to bring him to the bathroom to puke. Like, he was laughing so much. But it was good crack.
Where was it?
It was in Tala. And the guy who's the world champion he's from Tala, and so there was a lot of local support for him. But on stage, you got the guy who was fighting and held him like with his arms locked behind his back, so his chest was exploded, and he invited a load of kids from Tala up to slap him across the chest. Yeah, so it was it was good crack. I' 'd recommend 100% got COVID there, I would say. and probably like the only person to shower that weekend as well. But apart from that, like, it was good. So
really, really sold it at the end there, Steve.
Yeah.
Really,
The smell of
have you been to like a WWE promotion?
Yeah,
before?
Like 1990. That's how old I am.
Fuck.
1990 was in a different.
Hulk Hogan and all walking around.
Yeah. The Undertaker was there. Still have the program from it. But the smell of deep heat in the air, like, was just fucking like that. Thankfully, overpowered the BO. But yeah, an experience. It was good. No, I'm joking. It was good. It was really good. It was good fun. You know, better than watching Manchester United. So.
Yeah, I was going to say you were out enjoying that, and obviously Ireland beat England too. In the rugby, which is nice. Keith Earls, 100th appearance and a try. Excellent, because the rugby World Cup starting very, very soon.
I love the way he jumped over the line as well. Keith Earls, it was great.
Yes, hurdled the defender. Yeah. Excellent. I don't think there's anything else for us really left to cover on the podcast this week. I think we covered enough transfer stuff beforehand. We've talked about, obviously, how we think our teams are going on this week. Paddy and Johnny, well, hopefully all being well, be back next week, so Johnny will be able to fill us in on how glorious Arsenal are doing. I've been trolling Johnny, if anyone's noticed, on Twitter tonight about Gabriel leaving to go to Saudi Arabia. He hasn't really taken that well, which is perfect. He's concentrating in this match. No doubt if Arsenal win, he'll come into the group and let us know. As I keep saying, like, if you have any mates who follow the non, say, sort of top four, and they want to come on and chat to us about what it's like following, I mean, a club that isn't sort of classified as one of the big clubs, tell them to get involved on the Football Babble. Shoot us a line on social media. Or if you know one of our members, get in touch with them and we'll get you on, because it's sort of the mini-series that we're sort of doing. We're going to be releasing throughout the season, just to get a different perspective on football, especially football in the Premier League or football in other countries. Like, I'd love to get someone else on who has seen a lot more Real Oviedo than I have, because obviously Santi Cazorla has just signed for them, which is really exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he goes. Hope he doesn't play on the pitch in the winter, though, because it chops up like something not wise, and he'll end up, his two knees will fall off. to be honest, we shouldn't go anywhere near it. But yeah, things like that there, just to get on with Babbel. Folks, thanks for listening. Any messages or any comments or any feedback, drop us a line. We got some during the week from other listeners, which was nice too. The listenership is increasing, so keep going. That's very good for us. Enjoy your football this week. There's Champions League qualifiers on, I believe.
Rangers.
Their last leg of your Rangers with PSV, Europa League as well, and then I think the draws are coming up for that too, which is mad. Like, and we're almost at the end of August, heading straight into September. Holy ghost. Thanks for listening. Get us across all the socials on the Football Babble Pod, Twitter and Instagram, and chat with you again next week. And as always, I hope all of your football teams lose apart from mine. Good luck.